No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype questions to BBSRADIOPR. Happy 4th of July, Maria.
And to you.
I hope you had a good one.
It was fabulous. I had all four of my children together.
I know. I saw a picture of you and your beautiful daughter on Facebook or Twitter or something. I can't remember.
She hasn't been in town since Labor Day, so it was the first time we got together as the five of us over since Labor Day. So, yeah, it was lovely. How about you? What did you do?
Well, I went and I went to several activities, including marching in a parade that almost killed me because I'm getting old and it was 100 degrees. We're going to talk to our guest in a minute who did so much more on the 4th of July probably than I did and weathered better for it. But, yeah, it was hot. Seems to always be hot in this parade, but we have a little community parade that I'm in, and then we had some friends over for dinner, so it was a nice day.
Wow, that's a big day.
Yeah, well, it was fun. It was fun, and the parade is fun. We throw candy to the kids. You and I talked about this last week, where Karen wanted me to throw raisins, so that the children would hate me in perpetuity, but we threw candy. We had a lot of fun and it was great. I got to meet a lot of great people, including having my picture taken with a really handsome Cub Scout named Alex. I think Alex only had two front teeth left, but anyway, it was a lot of fun and I had a good time. But there was a lot going on in Washington, of course, the celebration that the president had. And we have with us today, she's been on the show before, Medea Benjamin, author, peace activist, co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange. And we're going to talk to her about what she did on the mall. And so welcome. Medea, welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So tell us, I mean, for those of you that have lived under a rock recently and haven't heard, the Code Pink people, who are the most fearless women on the planet, I'm telling you, they're amazing. They went and they got the 20-foot baby Trump balloon from the British and brought it over here and displayed it on the mall. First of all, tell us, how did you do that? What did they, FedEx you the balloon? How did that work?
Well, actually, we didn't get it from the UK. We got it from a place a lot closer, New Jersey, because there is a group in New Jersey that has made replicas of the British blimp, and they brought it down, and together we helped set it up and had it up most of the day. We had it up from 10 o'clock in the morning till about 3 when there was a big thunderstorm. We took it down and then we put it up again. And I must say, it was a great attraction, even to the people who were there for Trump, because one thing we do have in common is most of us have a sense of humor. So we had a lot of them with their Make America Great Again hats on, taking pictures in front of the baby Trump.
Good. Good.
Well, and that's so...
It was a bipartisan attraction.
Yes, it was. And, you know, there was also another attraction there that we thought was going to be very controversial because it's a little more risque, and that is Trump sitting on a golden toilet with a cell phone in his hand. And it's a big, it's like a 18-foot robot, and the robot says things and makes noises. And so we thought, oh, people are going to really hate this one. But no, they loved that as well, and they kept coming over to get their pictures taken. So actually, even though it was a horrific day in terms of all that militarization and Trump turning the holiday into a celebration of it himself, it was kind of like we had a little liberated zone in our area. And we also had good conversations with people from the other side, some aggressive guys, of course, who we had to calm down or make them leave our space. But for the most part, very friendly.
Well,
so, Michael, you and I spoke earlier in the week about how this could become contentious based upon the permits that were given to the various factions and the proximity thereof. And it sounds like that didn't happen.
No, it didn't happen at all. In fact, we're going to go in this week with a gift to the National Park Service because they were really very nice to us. They bent over backwards to get us the permit, even though we couldn't get it exactly in the line of sight of the Lincoln Memorial where we wanted. They did give us a good space. And even though they wouldn't let us put helium in because they say you can't have helium within, I think it's 15 miles of the National Airport, we were able to blow it up. And they didn't give us a hard time with the big robot we brought. And we also had balloons that were replicas of the baby Trump. And we were blowing those up with some with helium and some with air. And it expressly said that balloons were not allowed in the mall. So we knew we were violating the prohibitions. And when they came over to tell us to stop, we just kind of stopped. And still there were about 100 of those we had already blown up, and people carried them around all day. And nobody told them to, you know, deflate them. So I think we have some friends in the National Park Service.
Well, that's good. And you should have some friends. And you should have friends everywhere. Because like I said, when we started the show, you folks are absolutely fearless. I mean, I think that you have raised the whole use of civil disobedience to an art form. I think that this is exactly what people like King and Gandhi had in mind when they talked about civil disobedience. You're absolutely resolute. You're absolutely peaceful. You're at, you know, I mean, you just, your group just amazes me, Madea, really.
Oh, that's very sweet of you. You know, one thing we also did that I enjoyed very much is we had an open mic, and we let people come up for a minute or 2 minutes at the most to say what they wanted to say. And we said, we don't care what you say, what side you're on, come up and say your piece. And that was very nice, too, to have that kind of open dialogue and not restrict people according to what they wanted to say. So there were some people that came up that talked about how much they loved Israel and they didn't like the position of Code Pink and others on Israel. Then we got into an open mic about the presidential campaign and asked people, you know, who they were, who were their favorites and why. And that was really interesting too, because we had people get up there and say that Jay Inslee was the best one, or good thing. We had people that were advocating for Joe Biden even, and it was just, I love those spaces where we can say, look, you know, let people say their piece, and you'll tell from the audience whether you get applause or not, but we're not going to grab the mic away from anybody. And that was a lot of fun. We also had somebody who came and read Frederick Douglass's speech about the 4th of July and what it means to people who were slaves. And that was very profound. And we had the labor chorus that came and sang, and a comedian, Lee Camp, who, if you don't know, your listeners might want to Google and see his show called Redacted Today Tonight, because he's very funny political comedian. So it was a great time.
Well, it's great that you're doing that too, because that's exactly what we need, isn't it? I mean, I'm a dyed-in-the-wool liberal, but I'm tired of just our attitude of just resisting. I think there's, as an activist, there's a place for resistance and civil disobedience, but there's also a place where we need to come together. And it sounds like on the 4th of July, on the Mall in Washington, D.C., you found that place. And I wish we could find that place more often, because until we start talking to each other, right, we're never going to get
it.
If it's just a matter of resisting, we're never going to get it done.
Well, in Medina, it sounds like you had an impromptu town hall of sorts.
You know, that's so interesting you would say that, because some people came up afterwards and said, we never get this kind of discussion. This was great. We have to make it a regular thing. You know, maybe it should be something we always do on the 4th of July is, you know, talk about where our nation is headed. But we need more of those spaces. And you're right. It was a town hall from the ground up, a people's town hall. I mean, on the negative side, it's hot in D.C. on July 4th, and it was a hot day. But we do absolutely need more of these open spaces where we can hear a variety of views, where people can come with their mega hats and their I Love Trump shirts and not feel that they're going to be attacked by us, and that we can go into their spaces in the same way. Now, that doesn't mean we should do, as you've been saying, civil disobedience and sit-ins and a lot of resistance, but there should also be times when we do some listening and talking with people who are not, who don't agree with us.
Yeah, and as Dr. King, I mean, I think Dr. King said it best, that an eye for an eye leaves everybody blind. But go ahead. I'm sorry, Maria.
It's okay, because, you know, Medea, I think what you've hit upon here is that if people are respected, I don't think they get defensive. And if they're not defensive, they probably don't get aggressive, and they might actually talk about their feelings and their fears, which then opens up the dialogue to, how can we validate that, or how can we solve that, or how can we relate to that, or how do I feel about that, instead of polarizing?
Well, you know what issue kept coming up over and over again where we agreed with each other, and that was, we don't want more war. And people would come up to us and say, you know, I don't agree with most of what you do and say, but I respect the fact that you protested war under Obama, that it's not just a partisan issue for you. Or there were a bunch of young people who would come up and talk to us, and we would ask them, you know, how do you feel about a pending war with Iran? And they all said the same thing. We don't want it. We want to get out of the wars that we're in. And so that is something that I feel across the board. And in fact, yesterday, there was a group that a lot of them were, well, some of them were white nationalists. Some of them were conservatives who had been banned from the internet, and they came together to do a, quote, free speech rally. Some of them were also banned from speaking at universities because of their right-wing views. And then we had folks on our side who were doing a counter rally, and we went into the conservative side to talk to them and ask them about their views. And again, the war thing was something we totally had in common. And they were very happy to realize that on the left and the right, there is a total opposition to the wars that we're presently in and to Trump getting us into new ones.
Well, you know, I must tell you that when Marie and I talked last week, this was really was my biggest concern, was not what you were doing on the mall so much as what was going on Saturday with the first group you talked about on Freedom Plaza and the other group being right next door in Pershing Park. I said to myself, boy, this is just a formula for disaster if these two groups get together. So it's amazing to me that you were able to bridge that gap between the two groups and talk reasonably with each other. And I think it shows that we can do this, that mm-hmm. it's not, you know, that for Marie and I say all the time, Medea, that she as a Republican and me as a Democrat, we find more things we agree on than we disagree on. Sure. And I think it's because we talk to each other. So yeah. What about the rain? How did you deal with the rain? I want to know about that real quick. How did you deal with the rain? Because it poured for a while, right, while you were
it
there?
It did. It poured a lot, and it went on for a long time. Thanks again to the Park Service, we had been allowed to put up 3 tents. And so we had a place to get shelter from the rain. We took down the baby when we saw it was about to rain. And so we had to wait until the weather was good enough to put it back up again. But the rain actually cooled things down a little bit because it was so hot and humid that in some respects it alleviated the uncomfortable heat a little bit with the rain. We hoped it would have been a downpour when Trump was speaking, but unfortunately the rain stopped right before.
Now.
Well, we
showing your true colors.
We did too. Go ahead, Maria.
I would like to ask you, what caused you to create Code Pink? What need did you see that wasn't being served, or what gap was there that hadn't been filled? What was the genesis for you?
Well, it's very simple. This was after 9/11, and we saw ourselves careening into war not only with Afghanistan, but also with Iraq, and we knew it would be disastrous. So we created Code Pink to counter the Bush's Code Yellow, Orange, Red alert that was justifying more violence. And we thought we would be creating a group that would get together infrequently to do actions to stop a war. We didn't stop the war. And unfortunately, because the U.S. is still so involved in the Middle East, we're still around today. We would have loved to dissolve a long time ago and go back to the other work that all of us were doing. But it's been almost 20 years now, and not only are we still in the wars, but I'm very, very worried about a war with Iran. I feel that there is a war pending, and we've got to do everything that we can to stop it from happening.
And what do you think that looks like?
I think on the one hand, we should all be pushing our Congress people, and I really mean pushing, not just calling and sending an email, but going to the office, demanding that they sign on to a bill that says no military intervention without congressional authorization, and do sit-ins if you have to in your congressional offices until you get an answer from your congressperson where they stand. There's a version of it in the House, and there's a version of it in the Senate. So that's one thing to do. The other is to be contacting. We're constantly asking people to call the State Department, to call the White House, to be writing letters to the editor. We write lots of articles. We ask people in their home communities just to go out on the street with signs and say no war with Iran. If we thought the war with Iraq was bad, and it certainly was, a war with Iran would be even more catastrophic because it's a much larger country of 80 million people, a well-armed military, and they are much more organized and prepared for a U.S. invasion than Iraq ever was.
And that enriched uranium.
Well, but, you know, that is absolutely a crisis manufactured by Donald Trump, because the Iran nuclear deal that was signed by Barack Obama and then ripped up by Trump was working to make sure that Iran would not get a nuclear weapon. The rest of the world thought it was a great agreement. And when Trump ripped it up, he also reimposed sanctions that have been devastating for the Iranian economy. And the Iranian leaders, especially the conservative ones, are saying, why in the world are we sticking to an agreement that has always already been violated by the United States? And so they are saying, all right, we're not going to comply with it because it's not an agreement that's been adhered to by the signatories. So Iran is not, I mean, we don't want anybody to have to be enriching uranium. We don't want anybody to be moving towards a nuclear weapon. But certainly Iran was complying, doing everything asked of it. There were 14 inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency, all saying that, yes, Iran was complying. So Trump has just been awful about this, and he is the one now pushing us into war with people like John Bolton, who've been advocating for war with Iran for over a decade now.
Do you think that, Medea, do you think we've vilified the Iranians? You know, I'm a guy that worked for Jimmy Carter, so I remember very well the hostage crisis. Have we vilified the Iranians since that point? Do Americans feel, do you think, that Iran is really our enemy?
Yes, because the media parrots that, the Congress does, the White House does, and they keep saying a lie over and over again that Iran is the number one state sponsor of terrorism in the world. That is just not true. If there were one country we should pick, it would be Saudi Arabia, because Saudi Arabia has spread its perversion of Islam, Wahhabism, all over the world. That has become the foundation for every terrorist Sunni sect from Al-Qaeda to ISIS. And yet the U.S. is not only cozy with Saudi Arabia, but sells Saudi Arabia massive amounts of weapons that they're using to devastate the neighboring country of Yemen. So if you were to choose between Saudi Arabia and Iran, I would choose Iran a thousandfold. It is definitely a much more politically open country compared to Saudi Arabia. There are actually elections in Iran, different factions. It matters who wins those factions. Women are freer in Iran. Yes, it's a country, it's a theocracy, and I certainly wouldn't want to live under a theocracy, and there are all kinds of problems it has. But compared to Saudi Arabia, it would make a lot more sense for the U.S. to ally itself with Iran.
Well, you know, that's something I've never really understood, because the people on those planes that flew into the buildings on 9/11, they were Saudis. They weren't Iranians. It really is something that's always perplexed me. And I've told this story several times, but we had a woman that worked in our office that came to the United States. She was Saudi. She came when she was 18 years old to have an operation that she couldn't get in Saudi Arabia. She walked out of the hospital and never went home. She didn't have any family here. She didn't have any money. She didn't. And when I asked her about it, she said to me, why would I go back to a country that hates women? I wanted to stay in America because I felt like here I could be free. But, you know, I wasn't going to go back to a society where if I held hands with my boyfriend, people could drag me out in the street and stone me. And she actually became an American citizen on July the 4th. So,
that's a real story.
Well, she's one of the lucky ones, because I have a bunch of Saudi friends. Either they're women activists who are in prison right now in Saudi Arabia undergoing terrible conditions just for trying to get more rights for women, or they're Saudis here in the United States that are having a very hard time getting asylum, and if they went home to Saudi Arabia, would be executed. And, of course, execution in Saudi Arabia is mainly by beheading. So it's a terrible, terrible thing that the U.S. government is so supportive of the Saudi regime. When Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post journalist, was murdered in such a brutal way, there were many people who said, okay, this is going to change things. This is just over the top. And yet, after a certain period of the White House kind of saying, oh, well, we're looking for answers. We want to know what happened. Now they don't even say that anymore. And Congress There are some Republicans who are still saying, wait a minute, that Khashoggi thing, like Lindsey Graham, who was a great supporter of Saudi Arabia, is saying, we've got to do something about this now. But for the most part, they've gone back to their support for Saudi Arabia, for the weapons companies in the United States that make billions of dollars by supporting the Saudis, and the oil companies that want to be able to work with the Saudis to decide what the price of oil is.
And is that, do the Iranians need better PR people? Is that, or is the problem that we in America support Saudi Arabia because big corporations support? I don't understand why the Saudis have such a great image, because in America, because I think that most Americans would tell you that the Saudis are our friends and the Iranians are our enemies.
Well, that's what they've been hearing even under the Obama administration. Even when they made the Iran nuclear deal, there wasn't a move after that, which the Iranian government thought would happen right away, to move on to, okay, what's the next thing that we're going to start negotiating about? And one of the reasons is Israel, because Israel feels like Iran is an existential threat. And even though the Iranians might have slogans saying death to Israel, in reality, the Jews in Israel, who I have in Iran, who I have visited, are the largest population of Jews in the Middle East outside of Israel. They have no problems. They have synagogues that they go to that are unguarded because nobody would do anything to them. And when I go as a Jewish person, they love the fact and say, we love Jews. We have no problem with Jews. We have a problem with Israel as it exists today, and the way that they're oppressing Palestinians. But you have Netanyahu, who has been pushing the U.S. to go in there and bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, even though Iran has zero nuclear weapons. And Israel, we think, has hundreds, but they won't say anything about how many they have. If they have them, they won't allow any inspections. They won't join the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's just an incredible double standard that might not be very recognizable to people in the U.S., but it certainly is something that people around the world look at and say, why is Iran being treated so differently from other countries that have nuclear weapons? And, you know, I say this as somebody who would love to see no nuclear weapons anywhere in the world, and especially in the Middle East. But this double, triple, different standards just doesn't make for good policy.
And the Saudis, I mean, do the Israelis see the Saudis as not a threat? They see the Iranians as a threat, but they don't see the Saudis as a threat?
No, in fact, they're working with the Saudis under the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And they don't challenge the Saudis on their repressive form of government or the war in Yemen or any of those things. As long as they can work together against Iran, Israel is totally fine about doing that.
Tell us, because I was intrigued by this. I know so much about Code Pink because I run into you folks all the time. I don't know if you remember, we even saw each other at the Republican convention in Cleveland.
That's the story.
Yeah, the first time local Republicans, you know, Maria, I've had a role at the past 10 Democratic conventions, every Democratic convention since 1980. But last convention, we got an invitation from the Republicans in Washington, D.C., the local Republicans, to join them. And, of course, Senator Strauss and I went, yeah, what the hell, let's go. You know, we've never been to a Republican convention. And who are one of the first people that I run into? Medea Benjamin.
Oh, my God.
Her people outside, yes, being protesting. Medea and I talked briefly about getting into the convention. And the next thing I know, I look up on the Jumbotron, and I think they were arresting you. Didn't you get arrested there, Medea?
Well, I got dragged out of there, but they didn't arrest me because it would have been more publicity.
Well, yeah.
But we do manage to get inside both the Republican and Democratic conventions and keep sending that message of end the wars, bring the money back home, invest in human needs and the climate crisis, and not in perpetual war. And we'll keep doing that. I'm going to have to leave you because we have an event right now. Okay. But it's been wonderful talking to you. And I look forward to seeing you, if not before, at the next conventions.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we have a hearing on statehood on the 24th of July on before Elijah Cummings Committee. So maybe we'll see you up there. But yes, thanks
definitely.
So much.
Oh, definitely. We're looking forward to that. And thank you so much for doing that and the work to try to get us representation in the nation's capital.
Thank you for being on the show and good luck with your event. We'll talk
My
to you again
pleasure.
Soon.
Thank you so much. My best
and your activism. I just love people who walk the walk, Michael, like you do. And this July 24th is just around the corner.
Yeah.
And do you have new news for us from last week?
No, nothing's gone on because Congress wasn't in session. You know, it was July the 4th week. We're only two co-sponsors away. Well, actually, we're a couple more than that because some of our co-sponsors don't have a vote. You know that Washington, D.C. is not the only place that doesn't have a vote. We're the only place that doesn't have a vote and pays federal taxes. But there are other, there's, Guam and the Outer Marianas and the Virgin Islands also have representatives. And they are among our co-sponsors, but they won't have a vote. So we need.
And Puerto Rico.
And Puerto Rico hasn't signed on. Mean old Puerto Rico.
Oh, is that right?
You. Yeah, because we signed
on. I don't think you mentioned that before.
Yeah, the resident commissioner of Puerto Rico, we put a lot of pressure on her to sign on because Eleanor Holmes Norton was one of the first people to sign on to their bill when they put their bill.
Really?
Yeah, and it was, so we don't understand why she won't sign on. It's become such a partisan thing. And, you know, one thing that we're very hopeful because this is going to pass the House of Representatives. There's no doubt in my mind that it will pass this session. It will go on to the Senate and it will die in the Senate. We probably won't even have a hearing on it. But and we're very hopeful because it's a partisan issue that we're going to take control of the Senate soon. There are many Republicans up for re-election. But what people have to understand is that as long as we have the filibuster in the Senate and we have cloture, we're going to need 60 people in the Senate most likely to vote for this bill. So even if we take control of the Senate, we're going to need Republicans on the bill. And everybody's focused here in Washington, unfortunately, on just getting Democrats. I would call it low-hanging fruit, right? Because it is a partisan issue. But until we convince a couple of Republicans to get on board, especially in the Senate, and we've met with a few, and there's some empathy for us. You know, it's we met with, for example, the top people in Joni Ernst's office. And Joni Ernst is a senator from Iowa, and she's a veteran. It's really hard for veterans to tell veterans from the District of Columbia that they don't deserve to be equal. So there is some room there for us to grow a relationship. And maybe what we need to do is maybe I need to go to Medea Benjamin camp for a while and learn how they can stand there and take Trump people and anti-Trump people and bring them together to talk
bring me along in your dog and pony lobbying efforts. I'm happy and proud to be a Republican that wants statehood for the District of Columbia. And I think what we've been saying with the guests that we've had recently is this is going to be historic. And why wouldn't you want to be on the side of what is right? And what is fair, be bigger than partisanship. And you can justify that to your constituents by saying right is right and this is wrong. And it's not, even though, yes, the two senators are most likely going to be Democrats, get that. But that's secondary to doing what is right for 750,000 people.
Right. And you know what? It annoys me sometimes that we don't understand, you know, history in America, I think, goes back about 5 years. I don't think, you know, you know what? I mean, and we're the party of civil rights today, the Democratic Party. But it was Democrats that kept Republican, that kept black people from voting in the South. So, you know, we can obviously bring people, you know what I mean? We don't have a lock on civil rights. And actually, we had a cabinet secretary who worked with us who said that that was one of his big concerns, that we were losing Republicans, that the Republican Party was losing their, you know, alliance with African Americans, because at one time most African Americans were Republicans. Mm-hmm. Frederick Douglass was a Republican, mm-hmm. For God's sakes. Anyway, we have our old friend Taboo.
Welcome to the program.
Taboo.
Well, hello, everyone.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm okay. Is it too late to get to talk with Medea?
Yes,
too late to get to talk with Medea because she had to leave. But what do you want to? What do you want to say? I know you know her. We all know.
Well,
her.
Well, yeah, and I really, and you know, I would say, wow, here are three people I really admire. All of you, you know, because you were talking about the dialogue. You know, this is an excellent place to have dialogue or to have her on. You know, it's really great. I really wanted to point out a few things. In particular, I had a question to her, and maybe you can answer it. Is it the, I got four or five questions. One, is it the baby Trump a protest? It's a British protest symbol, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the Brits were the first people to do it.
To fly it.
Yeah, as Medea points out, there's a group in New Jersey doing it as well. And that's where they got the balloon. But yeah, the original balloon was done by the British, and they put it up when the president went over to England to the first time.
Right. Well, I thought, you know, I mean, I love you all so much, but I want to ask you all collectively, do you feel as though that was not in the best interest of the country? You know, this is Independence Day. We separated from Britain. And it was my understanding that also she was protesting because they had military equipment on the lawn. I mean, down on the mall.
Yeah.
Well, it was a war. It was the war that got the independence. That's what this day is. And this, I think, is a reflection, a more realistic reflection of what war is by having war equipment. People now, young people in particular, don't really connect, you know, picnics, hot dogs, you know, on independence. I think this gives a synchronization, more realistic, of what and how we have the freedoms that we have. Somebody fought. Many people died for this. So I think, personally, I want to ask, can we reconsider? Can we at least apologize to the country and maybe to the president, I think? Because he is trying to do what Medea has been talking about a long time, if I understand correctly, bring the troops home. Now, she mentioned Bolton and all the people around him. He got a lot of people around him that wants to go to war. From what I can see, he's the one who's trying to keep us out of wars, but he's surrounded by people who's trying to get us in war. So these are some of the things I'd want to talk to her about.
I wonder how much is that good cop, bad cop, do you think?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it. And,
boy,
and
I appreciate your point of view, though, Taboo.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's exactly what she was saying. We'll have to have her back on the show, Taboo, but I think that's what she was saying, as that people were coming together over the idea that we didn't want
war, right.
more war. Whether your attitude is, you know, pro-Trump or anti-Trump, that was really the feedback that they were getting, is no more war. So I think you make a really valid point there, Taboo.
Yeah,
and,
well,
and, you know, I think what people objected to, just if I can, you know, speak for a second, is that they objected to the militarization of the holiday because it smacks of what totalitarian governments do. You know, the Russians are always bringing out tanks. The Chinese are always bringing out tanks, the, you know, for their parades. But, you know, as we all know through interviews with the president, he got the idea from the French. So it's not just the Russians and the Chinese. But I think that's what people objected to.
But wasn't it an excellent program? I was wondering what you thought of it. I thought it was very appropriate myself, and I was just wondering what she objected. You know, and did you all object to the military equipment?
I don't. I thought it was patriotic because he acknowledged every branch of our armed forces, and I thought that was a beautiful way to celebrate our holiday. And he wasn't at Camp David or Mar-a-Lago or on the golf course, as others have. But I thought, you know what, anything he does, people are going to vilify, so that's why they were saying that.
Now, that's the problem. If we're going to come together, I think at least on Independence Day, we can at least do this. And I'm concerned about the influence that the British still have over this country. To have a British protest symbol on our Independence Day, I would like to ask, can we think about this and at least apologize?
Well, you know what? Most of us, Taboo, I got to tell you, have gotten over the fact that the British went to war with us more than 200 years ago. So I don't think this, where we got the symbol, you know, that doesn't matter to me. Obviously, it matters to you, and that I think that's a legitimate concern. But
I think it's actually super sensitive of you, Taboo, and I don't mean sensitive in a bad way. Like, I get your extrapolation. I think it's an interesting conversation that we're having because I didn't go there, but I appreciate the fact that you did, and it's making me reconsider, frankly.
Well, thank you for thinking.
There's still animosity between the British and the Americans on certain things, right? We have We have our World Cup team, by the way. God bless.
Congratulations,
Megan Rapinoe and all those fabulous women. You know, we have them being criticized because one of them acted like she was drinking a cup of tea. You know, so there's still at least a little friendly rivalry between the two countries. And but
Megan doesn't put her hand over her heart during the national anthem.
I know. And you know what, Maria, you and I have had this conversation many times before. It bugs me. And speaking to what Taboo just said about patriotism, I was so pissed to see this guy that burned the two flags in front of the White House on the July the 4th. You know, it broke out into a fight. He was arrested. He's been released. But you know what? I believe you have the right to burn the American flag in protest. But come on, guys. You're going to do it on the 4th of July in front of the White House. Just use your head. You know, this makes us look so horrible to all the people that have stood up for 200 years and defended that flag. So, I think that we need to be a little more conscious of, what's really important.
Well, interestingly, because I have a girlfriend who's a Quaker, and she doesn't put her hand over her heart because they don't believe in pledging to anything. And so I thought that's why Megan was doing it, was for her philosophical, I don't think religion is the right word, thinking. But no, it's in defiance to where we are as a country, and I think to President Trump in particular. So,
we could go on for this for hours because they just banned the Betsy Ross tennis shoes.
Yes,
I don't know when Betsy Ross became a communist, but evidently,
Well, and Colin Kaepernick weighed in on that. That's why they killed it.
I know. And you know what? I think Black Lives Matter, but I want to tell you, Colin, if you think you can get $1 million a game playing somewhere else, you should have a little love
I'm actually surprised that Nike catapulted to him, but I guess what I understand is they say that he's been a great brand ambassador to them, and out of respect for what he's done for their product, they wanted to listen to him. But I also don't agree with him, and I would have bought a pair.
Well, and you know what? That's absolutely the truth, and I'm sure they chose him because people that wear I've got one pair of, I don't wear Nikes, but I've got one pair of Nike-like shoes. My son and daughters probably have 20 pairs of them in comparison. I know my daughters both have 20 pairs of them. So they are trying to appeal to a younger audience than people like us.
But think about the history that could have been provided with the Betsy Ross emblem.
There you go.
I mean, obviously they thought it was worthy or else it wouldn't have gone to that far in its production. It just didn't get delivered.
Yeah. Well, Taboo, thanks so much for calling in.
Could I say something real briefly before I go? One last thing. Could I?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The British and their impact right now relative to statehood, the impact that Britain still has on us. Let's look at right now the Russiagate. Christopher Steele is an MI6 agent. Operation Crossfire Hurricane. So to fly the British baby blimp and all it together, I think we really need to have some further discussion.
Okay. Well, let's have Padilla back on and have some further discussion.
Thanks
for calling, Taboo.
Have a great week.
All right.
Bonnie's on line too. Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Maria and Michael.
Hey. Hello. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. I was just so delighted that you had Medea on tonight. One, because her name is from Greek mythology that I totally love. And sadly, Medea was sort of a terrible person at that point, because she killed her children to get back at Jason. But anyway, I'm interested in Code Pink.
Because
I want to be doing more about
something
it.
That I want to know more about Code Pink, because I am totally anti-war. I'm totally anti-hate. And I would just like to be involved in something that I could help out with, something that I believe in, which is to get rid of all this animosity between countries.
Well, you're in luck because they're located in Washington, D.C., and it's codepink.org, and she's one of the three founders.
And if you go to the BBS website, you'll see on today's show her entire resume. So you can learn more about her there. And I got her cell phone number, so I'll hook you up, you know?
You know people, Bonnie.
There's always people and I know Bonnie. I've known Bonnie for years and you went to high school with the original Medea, did you not?
Yes, I did. I asked her not to kill her children, but she decided it was the best way to get back at Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. I never let Bonnie forget that she's a year older than I am. But thanks for calling in, and we'll hook you up with Code Pink. You'd be great. You're exactly the kind of person you're looking for. And the one question that I didn't get to ask Medea that I wanted to ask her is how she felt being a woman helped them in what they do. Does it help them because they are, I mean, they're such strong people, but do people gravitate to them more because they're less threatening? As you know, as women, they're less threatening than a bunch of men standing up there screaming slogans
It's interesting because their slogan is Women for Peace.
Yes,
but they encourage everybody. So it's, while it might be female founded and female led, it's an NGO. So anybody can get involved. You don't have to be.
And I believe, from what I've read about them, since Michael told me about them, is that they welcome men in it too. And
there's
just people that are against war, doggone it, and against
exactly.
People.
It's cute too because they say they encourage people of all genders, which I guess means now non-binary, right?
Yeah.
Because it used to be both genders, and now we're getting more egalitarian. Because we might be fluid, you know. We might not want to define ourselves one way or the other, which I actually understand. I kind of wish that that wasn't part of the questions. Because now with all my surveys that I'm doing with my statistics, we put male, female, non-binary so that you can choose to opt out of the male or female thing. But I think really, what does it matter? We're just humans.
Well, you know what? You and I, Maria, we had the first person, remember, on our show that got a DC driver's license where sex was not on the license. She was the first one to get one. Well, thanks for calling in, Bonnie, and we'll get you.
Always good to hear from you, Bonnie.
Yeah, and I've got the bail money, so we'll get you
cocaine. But you know what I think is so heartening about what Medea shared with us is that differences of opinion were expressed without hostility and violence.
Yes, yes. And you know,
on an emotional day, if you think about it, you know, people are coming to the mall in Washington, D.C. because they're super motivated. They're either patriotic or they're, you know, upset. And yet there could be a civil discussion amongst those people. I think that says a lot about where we're going.
Yes, I do too. And you know what? We have Anise Jenkins, who was also on the mall on line one. So
let's hear Anise. Hi, Anise.
Hi, how are you all?
Oh,
I just wanted to hear from you.
What was your experience on the mall?
It was very exciting. I mean, to see when I got there, the baby was deflated and he was laying on his back, but they blew him back up. And it was exciting to see. And there was one man who came that he wanted to argue, but nobody would argue with him. He was pro-Trump. And it was just very exciting to see a protest, nonviolent, because that's what it is, nonviolent direct action. Is very effective. Dr. King proved that, and Medea is proving that now.
Yeah.
She was were you there around their impromptu platform? Did you see it firsthand?
Yeah, I saw it.
Oh, wow.
I went,
just gives me goosebumps at the thought that we can have a civil, political, public discourse. Huh, imagine that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anise was not only in the parade with me that required me to take a lay on the couch for 45 minutes when it was over because I was so exhausted.
But then
she ran down to the mall after that. So God bless you.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have energy, Anise?
Yeah, I'm crazy. I am crazy. But I know it was so hot and I was determined to see it. I'm a great supporter of Medea's. And of Code Pink, and I admire them so much. I wanted to be there.
Yeah, how nice. How lovely that you did that. And were you able to navigate your way around physically? Like, was the crowd wasn't so dense?
They had the park police or whatever had things so blocked off. It was really hard. You couldn't even cross the street. They had these steel barricades up. So I just happened to run into it. I was looking for it. I knew they were going to be near the World War II Memorial, but they were all the way across the street, and I had to go all the way around, cross the street. Yeah, it was very difficult to get to, but I was so glad that I found them. I was so glad. We were there. Our organization was there. I wanted to talk to Medea and remind her we were there during their first protest. They were protesting the Iraq war in front of the White House, and we were there to support them then. That was about...
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Wow.
Maybe 10 years.
You sure walk the walk.
She does walk the walk, and that's why we so admire Anise Jenkins. She really is the soul of our movement. So thanks for calling in, Anise. We've run out of time.
Thank you.
Thank you for being the last caller.
And all right.
And we're going to... we're going to dedicate this song to Code Pink as we leave you today, and to Anise Jenkins, and to all the other activists out there that understand that what we do every day makes a difference in the world, and it's not about an end point. It's not about just getting somewhere. It's about doing the right thing. So we'll see you next week. And here's one from Miley Cyrus.
We want to thank our listeners for making us a part of your lives. We're very grateful, and we have a lot of gratitude because we know there's a lot of opportunities out there, and the fact that you continue to be a loyal listener means a lot to us.
Thank you, Maria, for being so gracious always when I forget.
I know you feel it.
You're absolutely right. Yes,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah. Have a great week, everyone. Happy birthday, America.
Happy birthday, America.
I can almost see it, that dream I'm dreaming, but there's a voice inside my head saying, you'll never reach it, every step I'm taking.
In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation, give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.